Before John Grigowski's lesson, the reading will be the Gospel of John, chapter 10, verses 1 through 18. John 10, 1 through 18. Most assuredly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus used this illustration, but they did not understand the things which he spoke to them. Then Jesus said to them again, "Most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved, and he will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life, and that they may have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. But a hireling, he who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And if the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them, the hireling flees because he is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and I am known by my own. As the Father knows me, even I so know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. The other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring. And they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. Therefore my Father loves me, because I lay down my life, that I may take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have the power to lay it down, and I have the power to take it again. This command I have received from my Father."
So this lesson almost had many different titles. It was almost, "Are we good sheep?" But I like the way this turned out a little bit better, "Do we judge?" This verse here, I think, or these series of verses, really says a lot. It talks about Jesus, and he's the good shepherd. And a couple of things, you know, it says he's the good shepherd because he lays down his life for the sheep, but it also says that the sheep know him by his voice. So it's an interesting thought that the sheep know him. And how is it that they know him? Thank you. Well, how is it that you know Jesus' voice? He doesn't directly talk to us today, so we can't actually hear his voice and know him by his voice. So what is his voice, and what do we have today that allows us to know him that once it's spoken to us? And I think, the gist of this lesson that we're going to go through tonight is how you are a good sheep, how you know him by his voice. And his voice, of course, is through the Word of God, which is the Bible. That is his voice, and that's what you need to understand. You need to know what is right and what is wrong. And in that is kind of the implication of discernment, of judgment, of knowing what is right, what is wrong. It's a thought process. So really all of this is, do we go through that thought process? Again, are we good sheep? Do we judge? Do we go through this thought process? At one time I thought, well, you know, some people can't. But I've retracted on that. I don't think that anymore. I think that the people just don't, because it's easier not to. So what I'm going to try to go through and show you today is that we need to, we have to, we're required and commanded to. So we see that Jesus was the good shepherd. And we'll go ahead, in 10, 1 through 18, we see that he's the good shepherd. If you move on to chapter 12, verse 44 through 49, we'll read that first. It says, "And Jesus cried out and said, he who believes in me does not believe in me, but in him who sent me. He who sees me sees the one who sent me. I have come as light into the world, so that everyone who believes in me will not remain in darkness. If anyone hears my sayings and does not keep them, I do not judge him, for I did not come to judge the world, but to save the world. He who rejects me and does not receive my sayings has one who judges him. The word I spoke is what will judge him at the last day. For I did not speak on my own initiative, but the Father himself who sent me has given me a commandment as to what to say and what to speak." So in this, it's a large statement, a very presumptuous statement of anyone to make other than Jesus. He says, the word I spoke is what will judge him. And he says, I did not speak on my own initiative. Who else could possibly even begin to say that? Who else could say that what I say, you know, what I say is what you will be judged at when you stand before God? And it's not because it's what I say, it's because I am saying directly what God says. There is not another person alive, has been alive, will be alive, who could ever hope to say anything close to that. And so that's kind of the premise of this study, is understand that there was only one who could make that claim. So there's only one that you need to listen to. So everything else that you hear, you need to check, look into, if it's worth it. At work, we kind of have a chart for a lot of programs, which has probability of occurring for risks, identifying risks. There's a probability that it'll happen, and then if it does happen, how bad are those consequences? And so you can see, you know, going from your left to right, probability of happen, more chance that it's going to happen over here, higher risk over here. Anything up in this upper corner, you need to pay a lot of attention to. Anything down in this lower corner means it's probably not going to happen. And if it does, you know, the consequences aren't that bad. Maybe it's not worth your time. But I guarantee you the probability that you are going to die one day, that's pretty high. The consequences that you'll meet after that, those are pretty high too. I can't think of anything that's further up in that upper right corner. So understand, you know, some things, you know, if I tell you how the Cowboys won last night, they probably didn't play, but okay. Do you really need to go check that out? Do you need to go and look online and verify, is there a book that you go to double check? Maybe, maybe not, you know, if you're really into that thing. To me, yeah, okay. I'll believe you, I don't care. If I tell you something is a matter of salvation, that's something you maybe want to look into, because there's a good chance that you will find out one day. There's a good chance it'll happen. In fact, there's nothing, I think, that's a higher chance. They say nothing certain in life more than death and taxes. And even more than taxes, you will die. You will one day stand before God. That will happen. And the consequences are higher than anything else. I mean, we're talking about eternity, which is much more than just living in poor conditions here on earth. So it's more than we can even comprehend, I think. You've seen these things where it explains the government budget. You know, I can grasp $100,000, whatever. I can't grasp trillions. That's because I don't have anything really to relate it to. I can't grasp eternity. I've only been here 33 years. I have no idea what eternity really means. I mean, it's a long time, but I don't really have a grasp because there's nothing I know of that compares to that. So the consequences are huge. And again, Jesus is the good shepherd, and he says here, his word is what will judge you, because it is what God wants, direct from God. So I have this one, and I had a little fun with the formatting. I put a strike through good. That's about as far as I get. Let's go ahead and read this. So when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my lambs. He said to him again a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, shepherd my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things, and you know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. Now in the scripture reading, we hear that Jesus was the good shepherd. So, you know, that brings up a question. Well, who is not the good shepherd? Who is the opposite? Or you know, that's making a separation. It's qualifying the shepherd with the good shepherd. Well, who is the other? I'm not saying here that Peter was a bad shepherd, but I'm saying here that you can find out that there are other people that will act as shepherds. And in fact, if you read qualifications for elders, bishop, whatever, however you look at it, they are to shepherd the sheep. They are shepherds as well. The good shepherd, no one else is the good shepherd. They can be good shepherds, but they are not the good shepherd. Now, the way that they can be good shepherds is that they teach what Jesus said. If they teach you what he said, then they are also teaching you what God said, and in effect also doing his will. So if you want to say who is the, you know, cross out, strike through, good shepherd, that's anyone who's trying to be a shepherd who is not doing that. And I don't think there's anyone in this audience who would say, well, you know, there's no such thing. This really, to me, points out that In another way. We've had it done many times, but it points out that there are people who will try to guide you, who will try to steer you, and many times they have, you know, very, very good intentions, but many times they're very wrong. Jesus was the good shepherd because you could have faith that it's Jesus. What he's saying is right. This is right. I have faith in it. He is Jesus. He is the author. So of course he's right. He's the inventor, the author. Anyone else is really just learning from him. So, you know, anytime you learn anything, there's a chance you can make a mistake. That's only human. Anyone who has made a mistake before, by that very definition, has to accept the fact that he could make a mistake in the future. And that's all of us. So you cannot trust anything that's up in that upper right corner to anyone else. Anything that's of importance, you have to check out on your own and convince yourself more than, well, he said so and I trust him. That's not good enough, unless you feel it's good enough to stand before God in the judgment day. And, you know, if he looks at you and says, well, why did you believe this? He said so. You know, if you feel comfortable with that defense, well, you shouldn't. But if you do, maybe it's not worth it. I would not feel comfortable standing before God and saying, well, I believe this and this because so-and-so. I would rather say because Jesus and not so-and-so. So if you'll turn to Acts 17:10. So the brethren immediately sent Paul and Silas away by night to Berea, and when they arrived, they went to the synagogue of the Jews. Now these Jews in the synagogue, it's talking about them, these were more noble-minded than those in Thessalonica, for they received the word with great eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see whether these things were so. Now there's two things in this verse 11, I think, that make them more noble-minded. The first one is they're religiously minded. You can see they received the word with great eagerness. So they want this. They want the truth. And you can see that they want the truth and not just what these people are selling, because it says they examined the scriptures daily to see if they were so. So I guarantee you that if they went in there and whatever they said did not match the scriptures, they would not have received it eagerly. Now that's what made this noble-minded. Not just that they, you know, they searched to see if it was so. You know, you can do that on an academic level and so what. But you have to receive it eagerly. You have to want it. And then once you prove it's right, then you incorporate that and you know that it's true and you live by that. And that's what they were doing, which is why they were more noble-minded. And of course, we all want to be noble-minded. That's a good thing. So to be that, we have to search the scriptures daily to see what we are taught is true, to see if it's true. If not, we have to stand before God in the day and then say, this is what I taught, this is why I believe it, instead of, he told me this and I verified it by the word of Jesus that you gave me to live by. Which I think is a much more comfortable defense. Luke 12:54-59. And he was also saying to the crowds, when you see a cloud rising in the west, immediately you say a shower is coming, and so it turns out. And when you see a south wind blowing, you say it will be a hot day, and it turns out that way. You hypocrites, you know how to analyze the appearance of the earth and the sky. But why do you not analyze this present time? And why do you not even on your own initiative judge what is right? For while you are going with your opponent to appear before the magistrate, on your way there, make an effort to settle with him, so that he may not drag you before the judge, and the judge turn you over to the officer, and the officer throw you into prison. I say to you, you will not get out of there until you have paid the very last cent. And this verse is very interesting. I think a lot of times that we look at the last of this reading, we look at verse 58 and 59, and we see that as the point of this whole reading. That is what we're getting to. But I think really what it is 57. And 58 and 59 are really just an example of 57. He's saying, why don't you do this? Here's an example. So 57, why do you not even on your own initiative judge what is right? So he's asking you, do you people not have the ability to know what is right, to know what is wrong? Like if you're going to court with someone, do you not know offhand, you know, you need to try to settle this first? He's saying it with a little more authority. But he's saying, look, people, you need to look into what is right. And you need to do something with it. You need to apply it. When you know what is right, then after that comes wisdom. Now you need to get to the application of that wisdom. Solomon had great, great wisdom. And it did benefit him in a lot of ways. But I don't think, again, anyone would argue that he did lack a little bit in the application of that wisdom in that he allowed himself to be pulled further away from God. He knew, in the book of Ecclesiastes, the very last, at the very end of it, it says, basically, the whole of man is to serve God. But if you look at his life, he pulled away from that. But you see that as one of his writings, as one of his wise remarks that he would want to pass on to the rest of the world. But you see, he had the wisdom, but he lacked the application. You have to have the application. That's why when I say you have to not only be able to think for yourselves, but you have to actually do it. You have to actually make that application and do it in your life. So let's go on from here. 1 Corinthians 14, 26 through 33. What is the outcome then, brethren, when you assemble? Each one has a psalm, has a teaching, has a revelation, has a tongue, has an interpretation. Let all things be done for edification. If anyone speaks in a tongue, it should be by one or two, at the most three, and each in turn, and one must be there to interpret. But if there is no interpreter, he must keep silent in the church, and let him speak to himself and to God. Let two or three prophets speak, and let the others pass judgment. But if a revelation is made to another who is seated, the first one must keep silent. For you can all prophesy one by one, so that all may learn and all may be exhorted. And the spirits of prophets are subject to prophets, for God is not a God of confusion, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints. So this, I also think, is a very good verse for this study, because it has a lot of things if you dig into it. We say that if anyone speaks in a tongue, it should be by two, or at the most three, and each in turn, and one must interpret. So why do we have, you know, at most two, three, and why do we have the need for an interpreter? Well, everyone knows we can't have someone speaking up here in a language I don't understand and it do any good unless we have some understanding for it. So that's why we have an interpreter. Two or at the most three, well, I'm sure you've all been in a conversation where, or a meeting where, you know, you have the one general meeting, and then all of a sudden there's another meeting that breaks off over here, and another meeting that breaks over over here, and another one over here, and it's impossible to tell what's going on. So, you know, you're going to miss something. You're going to lose something. You're not coordinated. You're not catching everything that's going on. So that's really what he's saying is you need to have, you know, someone with focus, and you need to understand what's going on. It's cool that he's speaking in tongues because that's a spiritual gift. But what's the point? The point is you need to be able to understand it so that you can take that, you can make a practical application of it, and you can use that, you can understand it, you can learn from it. Without that, it's totally useless. That's why there must be an interpreter, and he limits the number of people that are speaking at a time. Okay, you can all prophesy one by one so that all may learn and be exhorted. So again, here we have it in more direct language. You can do it one by one so that all may learn and be exhorted. Oh, and previously I wanted to make a point. In verse 29, two or three of the prophets speaks, and let the others pass judgment. So what are we seeing here? And let the others pass judgment. We have a prophet coming up here and he says something. And the others are to do something with that. What is it they're supposed to do? They're supposed to hear it, understand it, think about what that means, compare it to what we already know in the scriptures, and then pass judgment whether or not, you know, that's really... It says the let two or three prophets speak. Well, we know that a true prophet is a true prophet if what he says happens. So that's how you pass judgment. You hear what he says, you see how it matches what you already know, you see if it passes judgment, if it passes a sanity check. Even back then, in a direct way, he's saying, let the others pass judgment on what is being said. And the only way you can do that is if, you know, you have this sitting in your lap, you have an electronic version where you can do a search on it immediately, or you already know what's there and you can do a search on it in your mind. Right? You have to already know some of what's going on, or, you know, jot it down and look at it later. But you are told two or three prophets speak, and let the others pass judgment. Let them pass judgment is not a, you know, they really ought to pass judgment. He's saying, no, you need to pass judgment. You are directly, we saw earlier those were more noble-minded than those in Thessalonica because they checked the scriptures daily to see if they were so. Here there is a let them pass judgment. We are told to do that now more in a more direct way. And then in 33 we see, for God is not a God of confusion but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints. So we know that not only do we know that we need to do this, that we need to look through and make sure that what we are taught is true and it follows the standard for ourselves, because this is, again, the highest risk and the highest probability. But we have a reassurance, I guess, if you will, that when we do that, when we do it with an open heart, with an honest heart, when we look through this and compare everything together, it will all mesh together. It will all make sense. Nothing will contradict itself. You will come to an accurate understanding, because God is not a God of confusion. So basically what that means is you're not going to find a verse that contradicts another one. And you can be assured of that. Nothing's going to contradict itself. So I find it personally very assuring and very, very interesting, I guess. Just every time you read through it, you can see, you know, you've got another piece of the puzzle. And it's not just that piece, but you put it down, and all of a sudden, oh, you know, these other pieces, oh, that makes a flower or whatever. So now everything else makes sense. And now there are, you know, 100 more links that, you know, just connect all at once. So what you're assured of is those links now connect. Any puzzle piece you have, it's going to fit. Right? So you're not going to be sent off basically on a wild goose chase, which I think is very, very reassuring. Next verse, Matthew 7, 1 through 5. And so I thought I would cover this. The main focus, again, of this is, you know, we need to think for ourselves. But we're going to go through this because the title and its language is, you know, Do You Judge? We're all told many times by people who really don't understand that you should not judge me, which to an extent is true if you have no knowledge or no base of which to judge them in here. But we'll read this, and better from him than from me. Do not judge so that you will not be judged. For in the way you judge, you will be judged, and by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, and behold, the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. So in this, Matthew 7, it starts out, do not judge that you will not be judged. Basically what he's saying is, don't be a hypocrite. He's saying, let's read Luke 6, 37 first, and then we'll go back to this also. Luke 6, 37 through 38. Do not judge, and you will not be judged, and do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Pardon, and you will be pardoned. Give, and it will be given to you. They will pour into your lap as good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. For by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you in return. So you could see how possibly, if you didn't have a good comprehensive understanding of what was being said, you see this first verse, Matthew 7, 1. Do not judge so that you will not be judged. And Luke 6, 37, do not judge and you will not be judged. Do not condemn and you will not be condemned. You can see that real quick, how someone might get that impression, if those were the only two that you read. But again, if I were to stand up here and say that to you, you might walk away with that impression that you shouldn't judge anyone at all under any circumstances. What would you do with that then? Would you go check that out on your own? Because that's a pretty hefty statement. Let's follow that through. Let's say, for example, okay, so 1 Peter 3:21 says that we need to be baptized for, basically, baptism saves you. Okay, so 1 Peter 3:21 says baptism saves you. But I see someone who has not been baptized whatsoever, never came in contact with water, we'll ignore any other implications, and they say, I am saved. And I look at them and say, well, you know, I shouldn't judge you. Does that make it so? Does that mean that they're okay now? Well, not at all. They're not. But I shouldn't judge him. Well, no. I shouldn't judge him based on me. I should judge him based on what God has said. Now, God has said, 1 Peter 3:21, I really like that verse, if you can't tell, that baptism saves you. So now I should judge him with righteous judgment, which is coming up. We'll go ahead and go there. I should judge him with righteous judgment. This is righteous judgment, the Bible pointed to, not my slides. You should judge him based on what you know that God has said. So, you know, God lays down the law, and you are able to interpret that law and say, this is what this says, you are wrong. Maybe not in those words, but you are able, perfectly able, and within, I guess, your rights, for lack of better language, to say, this is what this says, you are wrong. Maybe say it a little bit more tact, but still, you can say that. What you should not do is, man, I really don't like purple. You should not wear that purple shirt. You know, and I picked something kind of trivial for a reason, but you should not wear that purple shirt. That's wrong. That's sinful, because purple is a scarlet color, and other religions use it, or whatever. That's beyond me. I should not pick that, because you may be colorblind and not know one way or another. Maybe it's a poor example, but I think you understand what I'm saying. We'll read through John 7, 19 through 24. Did not Moses give you the law, and none of you carries out the law? Why do you seek to kill me? And the crowd answered, you have a demon who seeks to kill you? And Jesus answered them, I did one deed, and you all marvel. For this reason, Moses has given you circumcision, not because it is from Moses, but from the fathers. And on the Sabbath you circumcise a man. If a man receives circumcision on the Sabbath, so that the law of Moses will not be broken, are you angry with me because I made an entire man well on the Sabbath? Do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. So, like I said, I should have let him say it. Do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. And what is righteous judgment? Well, what is righteous? This is righteous. So any judgment that I have that is not in accordance with this Bible, or speaks where this does not speak, or adds to it, that is not righteous judgment. Righteous judgment is what I learn from this. So we are expected, of course, to learn from this and apply that judgment to any kind of judgment that we make. Now, before I take any of you and make you think that I jumped off into an entire different tangent, I haven't. We're still talking about judging, not necessarily a person, but what someone might say. So here you are expected, it says, again, judge with righteous judgment. Judge what I say with righteous judgment. Judge what I say up here. Everyone who stands up here or anyone outside anywhere else, judge what they say with righteous judgment. Judge what they say based on what is written in the Bible, based on what you know from that book. I can lead you, I can help you, hopefully, to come to the right conclusion. But in the end, it is you who is going to have to come to that conclusion. It's you who is going to have to connect the dots. And it's you who is going to have to answer for it in the very end. So it's up to you, it's your responsibility to make that decision based on what you know, not based on what you know from what someone else has told you. So next chart, and I like this one. This is the first thing I thought of when I thought of doing this. I have this in my cubicle at work. If you can't read it, it says, when people are free to do as they please, they usually imitate each other. And that's, I find it fairly humorous. And the reason is because it's very true. Right? I mean, how many times have you met people in lower grades when, you know, you had assigned seating and you're like, man, I wish I didn't have to sit in this seat because my name's on it. And then as soon as the teacher's like, well, you can sit wherever you want, you know, everyone's ecstatic, but within a week, people settle down into their assigned seat. So when you're free to choose, you usually don't because it takes a lot of effort to do that. Now, I've got a perfect example of this. When I was in school, I had a professor, he was my advisor, who made a comment to me. And he said, you know, he was expressing how difficult this was, and he says, and you know, the atmosphere on Mars turns to solid, and it actually snows out. Wow, that's pretty cool. Well, it ended up in my thesis. And when I was defending my thesis, one of the other professors there said, man, that's interesting, where did you get that? And my advisor, who told me, says, yeah, that doesn't sound right, where did you get that? And I wanted with everything to say, you told me. But I should have checked it out. That was up to me to do. You know, it was a bit of an odd claim once I thought of it. And as soon as he said that, I said, yeah, you know, I really should have checked that out. Don't be caught, you know, anywhere, especially religious, because that's what we're talking about, but anywhere else. Don't be caught not knowing what you're saying. When you're standing, as far as we're concerned, when you're standing before God, you cannot say, as I said before, well, no, I didn't think I needed to be baptized because he said so, and he said that he was, you know, telling me what Jesus said. You cannot take that risk because people will fail you over and over again. Not intentionally, a lot of times. A lot of times they're trying as hard as they can. But again, if you have admitted that you have ever made a mistake before, you also have to admit that everyone else more than likely has. Everyone has made mistakes. What they're telling you may be the mistake that they're making. It's not worth it to leave it up to that chance or leave it up to them, no matter how good of a person they are. You, yourself, you are going to have to answer for it. You need to check it out and have your own faith. All right, next slide. John 12, starting verse 44. Concerning him, we have much to say, and it is hard to explain since you have become dull of hearing. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God, and you have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, for he is an infant. But solid food is for the mature, who because of practice have had their senses trained to discern good and evil. So, this verse is interesting because of the class that we were having when Mick was here about instinct. You know, by instinct when they do what is right and what is wrong. Well, in verse 14 here, it says, who because of practice have had their senses trained to discern good and evil. Well, if I'm up here talking to you, how do you know if it's good or how do you know if it's evil? How do you know what I'm saying, whether it's good or whether it's evil, if you have not had practice? And how do you get practice unless you are reading and studying and doing those things? Now, if you're not reading and studying and doing those things, but you are still coming to church and you are still listening and you are still doing everything that you can to learn, with the exception of physically going and doing it yourself, you're basing everything on a cart of houses. It's a circular reasoning there. If I train, for example, let's take someone who's going to a false religion, and I won't name any. Someone's going to a false religion and they're doing everything but checking it out on themselves. The guy gets up there, he talks, they listen, they go home. They think this is good, they think this is good, they think this is good. How do they know? They don't know any better. They haven't been able to discern good and evil, so how are they, when they go to learn, going to discern whether it's good and evil? If someone comes up to you and says, you know, no, really, A, not B, A, not B, okay, A, not B, A, not B, and that's what I'm basing everything else that this person says for the rest of my life, then I don't know, because I have nothing to compare it back to. You need a cornerstone. You need something fixed that is hard, that is good, that is right, that you can count on. You need the good shepherd. Remember, he said, you will be judged by my word. I do not speak on my own initiative. That's what you need. You need something that you need to know what you will be judged on. This is the fact. This is the base. This is the cornerstone. You need that. And that is something solid that you can then base your good and evil, your discernment, your wisdom of what is right and what is wrong off of. But if I don't have that, if I have, you know, I have this cornerstone here, and then I have someone who learned from that, but then he has all of his mistakes, which humans do have, you know, best intentions. He has his mistakes, and then he has his mistakes, and he has his mistakes, and he has his mistakes. It's that game telephone. Now, all of a sudden, I've gotten, you know, 4 or 5 generations down the line, and with all of the changes and the misinformations, and I only learn from that, but I see that as good. Now it's circular reasoning, because I have nothing that's good or bad to compare it to. It's all based on that, which has no bottom whatsoever. And when you're standing before God, all you can say is, well, he said so. You need to go back to the source, because anything past that is telephone. So, and also when you go back to that source, you also have to do it here, because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil, which also means if anyone has ever gone through a real training program, you know that it is not easy, that it is difficult, it takes effort, and you can't just set it down. I have an instructor, I do martial arts, and my instructor says, and I believe, you know, okay, you were black belt. 5 years later, you say you're black belt. No, you're white belt. You can't set it down, or you deteriorate, you forget it. It's just like a language. You use a language for so many years, you're fluent in it. What happens? A couple years, you don't lose it. You don't use it, you lose it. You forget it. We have that saying, you don't use it, you lose it. It's the exact same thing through practice. And practice is a continual thing. It is training. It is something over and over and over again. As soon as you set it down, you begin to degrade. Your mistakes start to come in. And then after a while, you just get further and further away. So you need to stay grounded. And the only way to do that is to keep going back to the ground. And then the last, pulling it all together. Let's go through a couple of these. If you were to turn to Luke 6. Luke 6:27. But I say unto you that here, love your enemies and do good to them that hate you. Bless them that curse you. Pray for them that despitefully use you. To him that smite thee on one cheek, offer also the other. And from him that takes away thy cloak, withhold not thy coat also. Give to everyone that asks, and of everyone that takes away thy goods, ask them not again. And as you would that men should do to you, do also to them likewise. So when it goes on, if you love them that love you, so what? What good is that? Keep that in mind. Love your enemies to remind you. Let's go on to Galatians 6, 9 through 10. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are of the household of the faith. Okay, and then one more real quick. Let's go to 1 Timothy 6. Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. 1 Peter 3, 8 through 12. To sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead, for you are called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. For the one who desires life to love and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. He must turn away from evil and do good. He must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and his ears attend their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. So these few verses I kind of wanted to read one after another. You get they're all kind of saying the same thing. I have this titled, We Must Take the High Road. Again, I'm not jumping ship or taking a tangent. The earlier lesson was really how you need to think for yourself. Now, if you're thinking for yourself, also application, you're doing for yourself. These love your enemies. If they smack you on one cheek, offer them the other. Let us not lose heart in doing good. Instruct them to do good. He must turn away from evil and do good. He must seek peace and pursue it. I can think for myself, but again, like Solomon, if I don't actually act on that, what good does it do me? It does me no good. I have a very academic knowledge, but no practical application. And God is all about, you can read the book of James, especially the second chapter, and read all about works and how we need works. We need to actually do what we're saying. You can read of, there was the two sons. One said, I will not go out in the vineyard, but later he did. And then one said, I will, and he didn't. And Jesus said the one who did, even though he said he would not, is the one who is, I believe he said, justified. We need to do. And this doing and thinking for yourself is not just verifying what you hear and hear, but it is doing it. I can't tell you how many times I have seen, kids. I can remember when I was younger, your parents would get onto, well, he hit me first. And I've had similar things now, and it's like, I don't care. That's the first thing I say. I don't care. I can just see God. You're up there in front of him. Well, he told me, I don't care. What did you do? What did you do? It's not about him. It's about you. What did you do? This is the only time I'll say it's about you. It's about what you did. You will answer for what you did. Whether he hit me first or not, it doesn't matter. I had, and this is really where this lesson came from. I've had people, time after time again, I will never be a Christian because they're all hypocrites. I don't care. So what? Though every person in the world is a hypocrite, though every Christian is a hypocrite, so what? You will not answer for them. You will answer for you. I don't like what so-and-so teaches. I don't like what so-and-so believes. I had a friend who told me, well, when I was young, someone hit me when I was in church and I never went back. Really? I had someone else tell me, I will never be a Christian because you're not supposed to think. You're supposed to take everything on blind faith. Well, hopefully I've gotten rid of that, or I've helped to, help you believe that that is not the case. And he said, his reasoning was, doubting Thomas. He didn't believe, and a nun where he went to school said, shame on him for not believing right away. And he questioned him, and he had real issues with that he would question something. He had issues with the fact that questioning something could be just wrong, and you cannot question. Well, I said, no, you have to question, because those in Berea were more noble-minded than those in Thessalonica, right? Bottom line, it does not matter what anyone else does around you. Like I said, though everyone else in this world is a hypocrite, it does not matter. You have to take the high road. You will eventually answer for what you do. Remember the probability. Remember the consequences. It's not worth getting in that last tit for tat. It's not worth, you know, throwing in your last word or your last punch. You just do what is right, what you believe is right. Whether you're not a Christian and have something holding you back, you need to look into what you believe is right. Look into it, find out what is right, and do that regardless of what anyone else is doing. If you are a Christian, then the same thing goes for you. You've already made that decision, but now you need to go through and not be that hypocrite that makes someone else say, well, I'll never be a Christian because of them. Go through your life and hear, turn away from evil, do good, seek peace and pursue it. How are you going to know what evil and good is? Well, you're going to have to study. You're going to have your senses trained to determine good and evil, and then you are going to have to apply it. So that's the end of the lesson, the last point that I have to make. I hope that I've drove it home and done, you know, a good job of this. This is one of my, I guess, pet peeves, if you can call it that. If there's anything that we can do tonight for that, in furtherance of that, to help you do what you know is right, tonight, later on down the line, a lot of this will take time. A lot of this you're going to have to study and look into. Anytime down the line, I'm sure anyone in this building right now would be more than willing to take the time to talk about any of whatever you have questions on with you. At probably any time that you want, we could find someone to do it. If we can do that, if we can help you in any other way, please come forward as we stand and sing.